Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is October 13th, 2016, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Cuts Like a Knife, but you might also need antibiotics for uncomplicated skin abscesses. And our guest skeptic this time is Chip Lang. Chip is an emergency medicine physician assistant working primarily in rural Missouri in community hospitals. He has an international experience in critical care and emergency medicine. He also has this new blog called Total EM, which stands for Tools of the Trade and Academic Learning in Emergency Medicine. He has recently started podcasting and is always looking to expand this new project. He cares about providing total care everywhere and wants all of us to be excellent when we see and treat our patients. Welcome back to the SGEM, Chip.
Thanks, Ken. It's great to be back on the show again.
Well, you've had some big life changes. Launched Total EM Podcast, won the Keener contest recently, and started your family.
My wife and I had our first child about 7 months ago, and it has been an amazing experience. Our baby has brought us a lot of joy, but she has kept us on our toes. The Keener contest is always a lot of fun, and the prizes have been intriguing. It is definitely worth answering the questions to find out the secret of the prizes. I'll have to figure out what to do on my own podcast. Speaking of podcasting, thanks for mentioning Total EM. It is a weekly podcast focused on topics in emergency medicine, especially for those in the rural setting. We have many interesting topics we plan on having and guests we continue to host. In fact, we are growing so much that Total EM is looking for extra help. Anyone interested in joining the podcast should contact me either through the website totalem.org or email me at thetotalem@gmail.com to let me know.
Well, Chip, it sounds like you're really busy with Total EM and that new baby of yours. But let's get this episode of the SGEM going with a case.
All right. Well, you have a 40-year-old male with a history of MRSA, presents complaining of an area of redness and swelling consistent with an abscess developing on his arm. He says that he has heard that antibiotics may not be necessary after his friend had an incision and drainage, and they did not give her any antibiotics. He denies any allergies to antibiotics and has taken sulfa drugs in the past without complication.
Well, cutaneous abscesses are a very common complaint in the emergency department, and we have discussed the management of these before on the SGEM. One issue was whether or not to pack after an IND. Our bottom line in 2012 was that routine packing of simple cutaneous abscesses might not be necessary.
We recently looked at whether irrigation of a cutaneous abscess after IND reduces the need for further intervention. The SGEM bottom line from that review was that irrigation is probably not necessary.
Another issue that has been debated over the years is if antibiotics should be routinely prescribed after IND. We covered a review by Henkin and Everett from 2007 on the SGEM number 13. It identified that there was very little high-quality evidence available on the subject.
They stated, quote, "A conclusive multi-center double-blind randomized placebo-controlled clinical trial is lacking and sorely needed," end quote. The SGEM's conclusion at that time was that the evidence did not support using antibiotics routinely in simple cutaneous abscesses, even in the era of MRSA.
Now we have a multi-center double-blind randomized placebo-controlled clinical trial to address the issue. So what's the clinical question?
Does trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole offer a higher clinical cure rate than placebo in patients with a drained, uncomplicated cutaneous abscess?
And what's the reference, Chip?
Talon et al., trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole versus placebo for uncomplicated skin abscesses, New England Journal of Medicine, March 2016.
And what was the population?
All emergency department patients greater than 12 years of age with cutaneous abscess that presented less than 1 week after onset and that measured at least 2 centimeters in diameter, whether by borders of induration if the lesion was fluctuant, or by ultrasound of the cavity if not fluctuant.
Now, they did have a number of exclusion criteria, and I'll include them on the blog for people to review. What was the intervention?
Incision and drainage and treatment with trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole for 7 days of 4 single-strength pills taken twice a day.
And what did they compare it to?
Incision and drainage and treatment with placebo.
And what was their primary outcome?
Clinical cure of abscess lesion at the test of cure visit, which was 7 to 14 days after the end of the treatment period.
and they also had a number of secondary outcomes, and I'll list those in the blog as well. But the author's conclusions were, quote, in a setting in which MRSA was prevalent, trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole treatment resulted in a higher cure rate among patients with a drained cutaneous abscess than placebo. Now let's go through the 11 quality checklists for randomized clinical trials. The first question, Chip, is the study population. Did it include or focus on those in the emergency department?
Yes.
Were the patients adequately randomized?
Yes.
Did they conceal that randomization?
Yes.
Did they analyze the patients in the groups to which they were randomized?
Yes, by modified intention to treat analysis.
The study patients, were they recruited consecutively?
We're unsure.
The patients in both groups, were they similar with respect to prognostic factors?
Yes.
Were all participants unaware of their group allocation?
Yes.
Did they treat the groups equally except for the intervention?
Yes.
How was the follow-up? Was it complete?
Yes, it was.
Did they consider all patient-important outcomes?
Yes.
And the 11th question, the treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
Unsure, but we'll discuss that in the nerdy section.
All right, let's go through the key results. They had just over 1,200 patients that underwent randomization. The median age was 35 years, and 45% had wound cultures positive for MRSA. And what was their primary outcome?
Well, the clinical cure by modified intention to treat was 80.5% in the trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole group versus 73.6% in the placebo group, with a 6.9% absolute difference.
So that's a number that needed to treat of 14.
Yes, and the clinical cure in the per protocol analysis was 92.9% in the trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole group versus 85.7% in the placebo group, a 7.2% absolute difference.
And again, that's a number needed to treat of 14 for a clinical cure. How about adverse events?
These were similar between trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole and placebo, with most being mild. The most common adverse event reported was GI issues.
Yeah, it was 43% for the trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole group versus 36% for the placebo group. But importantly, there were no cases of C. difficile-associated diarrhea, no treatment-associated serious or life-threatening adverse events, and the discontinuation rate was similar in both groups.
There were two deaths in total, with one in each group.
So now it's time to talk a little nerdy. And we have a surprise for the S-Gemmers. Dr. David Tallon, the lead author of this New England Journal of Medicine paper, has agreed to come on the show and answer some questions.
That is exciting. I'm glad he could join us today.
Well, Dr. Tallon is considered an authority in the area of acute infections that result in severe morbidity and death. He is currently on the faculty of the Department of Emergency Medicine and Department of Medicine, Division of Infectious Diseases at All of You UCLA Medical Center. Dr. Tallon also serves on the editorial board of the Annals of Emergency Medicine. Welcome to the SGEM, David.
Thank you.
Well, before we get started on the formal nerdy questions, I wanted to ask you, what got you so interested in abscess management?
I think abscesses, since the emergence of MRSA, have to be one of the most common bacterial infections an emergency physician would take care of. I mean, there's some shifts where I think it might be more common than women with urinary tract infections. And then, and the interesting thing about abscesses to me is that my colleagues are very opinionated about how an abscess should be taken care of, especially with regard to the use of antibiotics. There are some people who always use antibiotics. There's some doctors who use antibiotics selectively, sort of based on the unvalidated mythology of the abscess, right? If there's more surrounding erythema, if it's a bigger abscess, if a patient has diabetes. Of course, none of these ideas have really ever been very well tested and validated. And then there's some people who don't feel that there's sufficient evidence to ever use antibiotics. And in fact, I don't know if you two have experienced this, there's actually antibiotic shamers when it comes to abscess management. And that certainly exists around academic centers. If you get caught draining a simple abscess and prescribing antibiotics, someone catches you. They might even shame you for doing that. So, this was an area where we've had some study and we have a lot more opinions, but we didn't have an adequate study or adequate studies really to inform the best care. And so this was an opportunity to do that. So it's pretty exciting.
So, David, we have 10 questions we're going to go through. And, Chip, you've got the first question for David.
So the first question is on consecutive recruitment. It was unclear to us if the recruitment of patients was consecutive.
Good question. Yes, the recruitment was consecutive, but I have to say there were some periods due to things like human illness and staffing problems where occasionally we didn't have the study assistant staff in order to enroll patients. So except for that, which we don't think could in any way introduce any type of systematic bias, enrollment was consecutive, 24/7.
So the next question is about modified intention to treat. You did a modified intention to treat analysis and a per protocol analysis. Why did you modify the ITT analysis, and do you think that really mattered to your results?
I don't think it mattered to the results. The modified intention to treat analysis is sort of a standard sort of research approach. It's called modified because it's not a pure intention to treat would be everyone randomized. Modified were those patients, which was over 99%, who were randomized and got some study treatment, whether it be one pill of trimethoprim sulfa or one pill of placebo. So that makes it modified. And then there's various ways to do intention to treat analyses. Ideally, if you could randomize and follow everyone who was randomized, that would be ideal because those two groups are the most perfectly balanced because of the randomization process. In real life, sometimes people get lost to follow-up, and so you have to make certain assumptions and invoke certain methods in order to come as close as possible to intention to treat. So there's two approaches for modified intention to treat analyses, and it's important to mention because when people look at those, they'll say, wow, the cure rates are very low, 70-80%. That doesn't jive with my clinical experience. And the reason for that is that in one modified intention to treat approach, you assume that all patients lost to follow-up are clinical failures, which of course is actually, you know, more not true than true. Most people we know with abscesses do fine. So it makes the cure rates artificially low. We also looked at a per protocol analysis, and this tells us most about the effect of treatment in people who we are able to follow up carefully and who comply with their medication. And you can see that the cure rates there are much higher, 93% approximately in the antibiotic group compared to 86% in the placebo group. And this comes closer to, you know, what you might expect in your clinical experience. But the limitation of a per protocol approach is that as you move away from intention to treat, post-randomization bias could be introduced. So to get as close to the truth as possible, the best approach is to report results from these different type of analyses. And the difference in the clinical cure rate, the absolute difference it turned out, was about the same. It was about 7%. And that meant 7% absolutely more individuals treated with antibiotics achieve clinical cure. So I don't think, to answer your question, that modified intention to treat or per protocol led us to different conclusions. They, in fact, led us to the same conclusion.
So my next question also deals with antibiotics and deals with the dosing. You used 4 single-strength pills of trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole twice a day based on the recommendation at the time from the Stanford Guide to Antimicrobial Therapy. The newer Stanford Guide does not recommend the higher dose except in obese patients, basically BMI greater than 40. So do you think 2 single-strength pills twice a day will work just as well?
I do. The reason we used the higher dose, as you mentioned, was that was the dose recommended at the time. You only get one crack at this, and so we could have used the lower standard dose that's recommended now. But if we wound up with a negative study, then we worried that someone would raise the criticism that we didn't use a sufficient dose. We had one shot at this. We really wanted to test the efficacy of antibiotics, and we wanted to ensure that there was an adequate dose. There are, ways to study antibiotic penetration into skin blister fluid, which is a model that's used to predict how much, the dose you would need to treat a skin infection. And I can also tell you that there was a parallel study sponsored by NIH, which is concluded, although it's not published, where they use the standard dose you mentioned. Spoiler alert, but I guess we'll see the full publication. They also found a statistically significant advantage to their antibiotic arm with trimethoprim sulfa at the currently recommended dose. So I think that the Sanford-Gar recommendations are reasonable, and in a patient of average weight, adult of average weight, you could use one double-strength trimethoprim sulfa twice a day, and I suspect that that would be fine. It's not what we studied in our trial, so at least until that other paper comes out, it's a little bit of speculation. And I will say that the drug is so cheap, even at the double dose that we used in the U.S., the whole prescription costs less than $5. And compared to a sugar pill placebo, we didn't find significantly remarkable increased side effects or serious adverse reactions to that dose of trimethoprim sulfa. So I think either dose is fine, but I suspect that the currently recommended dose, which is about half of what we use, which is half of what we use, would be sufficient.
So let's take a look at the secondary outcomes. These can be hypothesis generating, and you had a number of secondary outcomes that demonstrated trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole was superior to placebo in the per protocol analysis. Was there an outcome in particular that you think is especially interesting that should be pursued?
There's a lot of interesting secondary outcomes, and I think one of the strengths of the study is that we looked at a number of them that are not sort of standard for the typical antibiotic trials that you see with pharmaceutical-sponsored registration studies. I think the one that's most important is we considered an alternative primary outcome, which was either an infection that was not responding and required antibiotic treatment or new antibiotic treatment, or one that didn't necessarily require new antibiotic treatment, but where there was a reaccumulation of the abscess or some pocket of pus, and that required a surgical procedure, an additional one, to drain that new collection of pus. I mean, if you think about it, either of these outcomes would be important to a patient, and especially in the U.S., another drainage procedure would add a substantial additional cost. I kind of think this, if I had to do it over again, this would be the preferred primary outcome. We found there that the difference in cure rates was even greater between the groups, 12% absolutely. And so the number needed to treat, as opposed to 14, which is what we found with our primary outcome of needing a new antibiotic, was reduced to 8 if you consider either that or needing a new drainage procedure. The other interesting secondary outcomes were that not only did patients' primary lesion resolve more consistently if they got antibiotics, but over 6 to 8 weeks they had fewer recurrences, and probably the most interesting secondary outcome of all was that people in their household experienced fewer infections in the group that got treated with antibiotics.
So my next question actually deals with MRSA prevalence. You had a high rate of MRSA, about 45%. Do you think these results have external validity to populations without such high prevalence?
Right, where are those populations? Not not most places in the world, and certainly not in North America. But if in there are places where they don't see much MRSA, and there they see MSSA, methicillin susceptible Staph aureus. I mean, I think this our study validates the germ theory. Trimethoprim sulfa is active in the test tube against MRSA, but also against MSSA. And I think trimethoprim sulfa or another oral antibiotic with activity against MSSA should yield the same results.
So the sixth question is about proper IND. As part of this study, you trained everyone on how to do an IND properly. That included irrigating the abscess and packing the abscess. Both of these have been shown to may not be necessary for the successful treatment of a simple cutaneous abscess. As an expert in this area, what are your thoughts on the standard treatment, and do you irrigate and pack your abscesses?
I don't think there's been adequate studies of irrigation and packing. I know of two studies that looked at packing, a small study in adults that suggested it wasn't necessary and just associated with more discomfort, and another study in kids where they actually found that not packing the abscesses was associated with a higher rate of abscess recurrence. When we did the study, we wanted to use standard methods and erred on the side of doing more instead of less. And so I don't think anyone's suggesting that irrigating might somehow decrease the clinical response rate. So we certainly did irrigation. And we packed the wound with the idea that of the traditional understanding that keeping the wound open help prevent the edges of the open abscess from coming together and leading to a reaccumulation of the abscess. I think both irrigation and packing of abscesses is an area that, you know, could be studied more. So I personally irrigate and still pack the abscesses.
This was designed as a superiority trial with a power of 90% to detect an absolute between-group difference of 7.5 percentage points, assuming a cure rate of 90% in the trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole group in the per-protocol population. You only found a 7.2% difference in the per-protocol analysis.
Right. Well, as you and some of your listeners may know, the effect size is an assumption that allows you to estimate sample size. And we tested superiority and were able to demonstrate that. In fact, you know, although our difference in clinical cure rate didn't quite meet the estimated effect size, it was very close, and the effect was, you know, the confidence interval of the difference was substantially greater than zero. So I think the study statistical modeling was adequate to answer the question, and certainly that degree of difference, considering the safety we observe with trimethoprim sulfa and its very low cost, would be relevant to inform provider and patient decision making.
Well, that brings us to statistical versus clinical significance. You did find a statistical significant difference, but do you think this represents a clinical significant difference?
Yeah, I think here the best person to make that judgment would be the patient. And I think there's absolutely sufficient information such that that discussion is justified. Now, there are going to be some people who have multiple antibiotic sensitivities who may not elect to take advantage of the outcome differences that we demonstrated. But there are many people who will. And if you look at a number needed to treat of 14 or perhaps as low as 8, if we talk about the need for a drainage procedure, it's very easy to justify an antibiotic that costs $5 for the entire course of treatment. If you can spare a patient having a failure, you would treat 14 at a cost of about $70. That's US dollars, a few more Canadian dollars. And that would spare a visit that, if the patient came back to the emergency department, would cost hundreds of dollars. And at a number needed to treat of 8, then it would cost you $40 to prevent a visit, which if the patient required a drainage procedure, their charge could be over $1,000. And so somebody pays for these things. And whether it's the cost of care or the cost of the inconvenience and pain of having another drainage procedure or driving a long way to a medical center or their doctor's office because the problem hasn't gone away, and in fact, it's gotten worse, I think that's potentially important to patients. That's not taking into account, that's just the primary outcome. Remember, if we believe that the secondary outcomes, which very consistently went in the direction favoring trimethoprim sulfa for a decreased rate of abscess recurrence, even over the long term, up to 8 weeks, and about one half the hospital admission rate, which although it was uncommon, is extremely expensive, and fewer infections in the patient's household, I think this would be an interesting discussion and one that we should have with our patients. So I think for those reasons, at least from this one trial, and we'll look forward to the other large trial, which is always a good idea before, committing to one type of care direction or the other. But I think just on the basis of this trial, we should have this discussion with patients. And I think that the trial results absolutely provide good cover for those doctors who feel that they want to recommend antibiotics and might should cause some pause for the antibiotic shamers.
So for my ninth question, I ask about harm. Adverse events were similar between the two groups, with most being mild. Are you worried about C. diff or drug resistance?
Well, we studied over 1,000 patients. Let's see, and half of those, about 600 or so, were treated with trimethoprim sulfa. We didn't see any cases of C. diff. We didn't see any cases of Stevens-Johnson syndrome. And we know that those types of complications are rare. I think antibiotics probably rarely prevent the dissemination of a staphylococcal infection causing very serious metastatic disease, including things like epidural abscess. And I think antibiotics, such as trimethoprim sulfa, probably also rarely cause some very serious adverse reactions, like a severe case of C. diff or Stevens-Johnson. It's probably a wash, but even with the large study we did, which is by far larger than any study that's ever been published, we didn't see those complications. But we were able to show that the drug, even at this high dosage that we used, was very well tolerated and had very few sort of typical side effects compared to placebo. So I am concerned about side effects of drugs, but I don't think that that's an important concern when it comes to treating patients with drained skin abscesses with trimethoprim sulfa. It seems to be reasonably safe and effective, and I think its rare effectiveness in preventing an invasive infection is probably balanced out against its rare opportunity to cause a very serious drug-related adverse event.
Well, David, our final nerdy question is, what advice would you give to EM doctors based on the study and your expertise in the area when treating simple cutaneous abscesses?
Well, I think antibiotic shamers should stop shaming. I think people should become familiar with the results of this study and engage patients in shared decision-making regarding if they would like, in addition to having the abscess drained, which is most important, to have adjunctive antibiotics like trimethoprim sulfa. And I also would ask the listeners to look for the other large study which was similar to this. It should provide some perspective on whether or not the results that we found are valid. From what I hear, that study's results will be similar, and it will also shed some light on the effect of antibiotic treatment compared to placebo in a broader population, which includes children.
Well, thank you very much for agreeing to come on the SGym and discuss your work and answer our nerdy questions. Is there anything else you would like to say about the topic of cutaneous abscesses?
I think you guys have done a really good job asking the best nerdy questions, and I hope I've risen to the task of being, as nerdy as you two. You're exceptional nerds.
I think that's high praise, Chip, coming from a researcher like David Tallon.
I'm taking it like that.
All right, well, it's time to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
We generally agree with the author's conclusions.
Well, how about a bottom line?
The addition of trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole to the treatment of uncomplicated cutaneous abscesses represents an opportunity for shared decision-making.
All right, Chip, how about a case resolution?
You discussed with your patient that in the past there was some limited evidence suggesting that antibiotics may not be of benefit, but that there were limitations due to the study's small size. However, a newer, larger study demonstrates that antibiotics are effective in increasing the cure rate for abscesses. After shared decision-making, including the risks, benefits, and potential complications of antibiotics, the patient agrees to receive trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole for his abscess after the incision and drainage is complete.
So how do you think we should take this information and apply it clinically?
Trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole should be considered as part of the treatment regimen for the management of cutaneous abscesses.
So what are you going to tell the patient at the bedside?
You're right. Until recently, we did not have good evidence that antibiotics were helpful in the treatment of abscesses. However, a new study has shown antibiotics can increase the cure rate by 7%. This means we need to treat 14 patients for one more patient to be cured. Antibiotics are not without risk, though, and there are certain populations that were not included in the study. We should consider trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole in the treatment of your abscess.
That sound reminds me, it's time for the Keener Contest. Last week's winner was Lane Rathgeber from Regina, Saskatchewan. Lane knew streptokinase is the name of the fibrinolytic substance produced by Lancefield Group A beta hemolytic streptococci. What's the Keener Contest question this week?
What antibiotic that is commonly used to treat MRSA infections has a black box warning for C. diff colitis by the FDA?
If you know the answer, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, there have been other FOMED postings on this subject, and I'll include links to those in the show notes. A quick conference update. I'll be in Las Vegas the week this episode comes out. If we run into each other, please make sure you say hello and let me know how we can make the SGEM even better. Well, thank you, Chip, and good luck with the new family and Total EM.
Thanks, Ken, and thanks for having me on as always. I really appreciate it.
Can you give the tagline?
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time.